The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink and criminalize
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, September 12th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. We got plenty of news and information for you. And of course, as always on Wednesdays, we visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine and we get the latest in cannabis science. You may have heard about that study going around saying that smoking pot, especially as a young man, will double or quadruple your risk of testicular cancer. Well, we're going to get the science and the facts straight from Dr. Mitch at half past the hour. So stick around. We'll also take your live calls at 971-533-7111. And in some new news here for the show, we now have a show voicemail line. So if you're listening to this on a replay and you still want to call in, you can. Dial in to 971-533-7111. Leave us a message here. Get your voice heard by the Marijuana Nation. We'll replay it on future shows. Also, joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, we have our news director, Carrie Gallagher. Hello, Carrie.
Hello, and it's beautiful today in Australia. Oh my goodness.
Oh, yes. Beautiful day. We're kind of on that cusp of fall here where it's cool in the morning and really hot in the daytime, and we're really loving it here. Carrie takes care of our hemp headlines, and there's plenty of them. So what's in the news today, Carrie?
Well, today we're going to talk about Measure 80 that's got some recent support. That's that legalization effort in Oregon. Also, a university denying a student for an internship. We'll tell you all about that. A conservative judge has gone on the record as saying he doesn't support prohibition. But first up in today's news, the Montana Supreme Court has passed down a ruling. I'm going to tell you all about that coming up in today's 420 headline news.
All right. Thanks, Carrie. Also in today's news, where I'm going to go behind the headlines on some new polling data out from Survey USA on Washington's I-502 legalization initiative. We'll check that out after the hemp headlines. Then at 20 after, it's time for our daily toker tunes. We always take a break at 20 after because, well, you know. And today's Irie Wednesday, so we got some more music from one of my favorite albums, Reggae Goes Country. We're going to play a song that was made popular by Alabama called Feels So Right, done reggae style by Gramps Morgan. Then at half past, we got Dr. Mitch Earlywine in to answer your live questions on cannabis Q&A. And at the end of the show, we'll have a little bit of time for a radical rant. I'm going to talk about the compromises we may have to make in order to get marijuana legalization passed. Stick around. It's the Russ Belville Show. RadicalRust.com. Be right back after this.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take marijuana off of the streets, put it in a store. We can make it harder for the teens to buy, sell it like a bottle of wine. Jobs for our people, money for schools, who could ask for more? 64.
Warning, it's taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Which of you are ready to admit to having used marijuana in the past? And they want us to go around and ask each of you. Senator Kerry? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Senator Edwards?
Yes.
Senator Lieber?
Well, you know, I have a reputation for giving unpopular answers at Democratic debates. I never use marijuana. Sorry.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Senator.
Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine. Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine.
And now it's time for the 420 Headline News with the Russ Belville Show News Director, Kerry Gallagher.
The Montana State Supreme Court has ruled that a ban on medical marijuana sales in the state does not violate the constitutional rights of registered users and providers. Back in the summer of 2011, the Montana legislatures passed a highly restrictive bill to replace the voter-passed 2004 medical marijuana law, on the pretense that the original law had allowed the program to get out of control, as evidenced by the thousands on the state registry. The new law was challenged, and parts of that law were blocked by District Judge Jim Reynolds, such as limiting the number of patients per provider to three and prohibiting a provider from making a profit. Medical marijuana advocates took their case to the Supreme Court, asking the court to expand the Reynolds decision and block the entire law. The Supreme Court decision of 6-1 this week has ruled that the legislature was within their rights to gut the medical marijuana law. And a final sting, they included in that ruling that the rights to health and privacy did not protect any medical marijuana use, saying that the fundamental rights to obtain and reject medical treatment does not extend to give a patient a fundamental right to use any drug regardless of the drug's legality. In November, a second ballot initiative will ask voters to reject the legislature's restrictive 2011 law and roll back to the original 2004 law. A no-conservative U.S. Court of Appeals judge has said that he supports scaling back the strict federal prohibitions on marijuana during a college lecture last week. Judge Richard A. Posner, the author of over 40 books about legal matters, told the audience at Elmhurst College in Illinois that we should only have a small fraction of drug laws that we currently have. He said that it was absurd to criminalize the possession of use or distribution of marijuana to wide applause. Judge Posner was responding to a question about the U.S. Penal Code and the power of prosecutors. During his answer, he said that he had additional concerns about the enforcement-first strategy to controlling drugs. He called the U.S. criminal law dealing with addiction, misuse, and ingestion of dangerous drugs as a nonsensical and said it is the reason for the high percentage of prisoners with very severe punishments. Judge Posner was appointed by former President Ronald Reagan. He's a member of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit in Chicago and considered the most cited legal scholar of the 20th century. A student at Pepperdine University in Malibu, California, has been denied an internship for the Marijuana Policy Project. Victoria Stanzione is a political science major at the Christian University and was seeking that internship with the national nonprofit group dedicated to reforming marijuana laws. According to the refusal of her application, Associate Dean Michael Feltner challenged the application that the internship was not aligned with the mission and the purpose of Pepperdine University. Morgan Fox, a spokesman for the Marijuana Policy Project, says that the decision was disappointing and that Pepperdine would deny any student the opportunity to learn about public policy by working on a social justice issue. And hemp-friendly business Dr. Bronner's Magic Soap has donated $5,000 to the Oregon campaign to legalize marijuana, known as Measure 80. The donation is the largest yet from a single entity to the Yes on 80 committee, and the first donation over $500. Fundraising has been difficult for the campaign, also known as the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act. According to the public records at the Secretary of State's office, the campaign is running at a deficit of $3,244. Campaigns to legalize marijuana in Washington State and Colorado are much more strongly funded. Dr. Bronner's company gave 10 times that Oregon donation, $50,000, to the Washington effort in June, and both the legalization efforts in Washington, known as I-502, and the Colorado effort, known as Amendment 64, have raised millions of dollars to fund their campaigns. And this is Carrie Gallagher with your 420 hemp headline news for Wednesday, September 12th, 2020.
Thank you, Carrie, for the news. When we come back, we're going to go behind the headlines. I'm going to take a look at the latest polling information for Washington State's I-502 initiative to legalize marijuana. Then we got our 20 after break with some Ivy Wednesday music. And after the half point of the hour, we'll be speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, taking your live calls at 971-533-7111 with your questions on cannabis science, history, culture, and health. We'll talk about the testicular cancer study with marijuana smokers and a new study out on smoking and pregnancy. Thanks for listening. It's the Russ Belville Show on RadicalRuss.com, TheWeedBlog.com, Pot.TV, and MikeCan.net. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
The Russ Belville Show. Chat is for friends 18 and older. We expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards that you can visit.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines. 12 after here at Rolla J Studios in Portland, Oregon. And we're very excited about the news coming out from Survey USA. We've got a new poll showing 57% support for marijuana legalization in Washington State. Very excited. Yes, studio audience has gone crazy. Survey USA has released a new poll showing that I-502, the marijuana legalization measure proposed by New Approach Washington, has increased its support among voters to 57%, with only a third of Washingtonians, 34%, opposed and 9% undecided. The numbers show that both support and opposition have increased 2 points since the last Survey USA poll that took place in July, showing 55% support and 32% opposed. And that is an increase from June polling earlier that showed 50% of voters in support and 37% opposed. Now, the poll question asks, a state initiative would license and regulate marijuana production, distribution, and possession for people 21 years of age and older. It would remove state criminal and civil penalties for the limited possession of marijuana, and it would impose an excise tax on marijuana sales and earmark some revenue for substance abuse prevention, research, and education should the measure be enacted into law. 524 likely voters were polled on cell phones and landlines, and the demographic breakdowns reveal some interesting data. Men and women both support the measure almost equally, 58% for men, 57% for women. Previous national marijuana legalization polls tend to reveal a 6 to 10 point gap in support between men and women. So this is very good news for the 502 campaign in shoring up that support among women who tend to support it less than men do. Younger voters overwhelmingly support the measure, yet support among ages 18 to 34 is lower at 58% than among the 34 to 50 and 50 to 64 age group, which are both registering 61% support. This may be due to less support among 18 to 21-year-olds who object to the zero-tolerance DUI standards of I-502. Among seniors age 65 and older, support and opposition are equal at 45% each, with 10% of seniors undecided. Republicans and conservatives oppose the measure, not surprisingly, 56% and 60% respectively. Yet, those who identify as Tea Party members support the measure at 54%. In another surprise, Eastern Washington, typically considered to be more conservative on the issue of marijuana, supports the measure at 63%, while Western Washington, typically more marijuana tolerant, supports the measure at 59%. Perhaps this owes to the burgeoning medical marijuana market in Western Washington that opposes the measure. So as we look at this, it seems like since HempFest, since I came back from all those no on I-502 people trying to convince folks to vote against legalization, that the support has only grown for legalization. Actually, a way to look at it would be to say there was 13% undecided in July. 2 points of them went to yes, and 2 points of them went to no. That is, undecided fell by 4 points, and it split evenly among yes and no. So if it continues along that rate, if 502 continues to convince half the undecideds, and no on 502 convinces half the undecideds, then legalization is going to pass in Washington state with 61.5% of the vote. Now, that just goes to show what happens when you have some money to promote your message. They have been running that commercial, New Approach Washington commercial with the mom. We've shown it on our show many times where she says, "I don't like marijuana, but it's time to talk about a new approach." They've been showing that commercial, running ads, and doing town hall meetings with very respectable people, you know, Rick Steves and John McKay and Judge Jim Gray and all these people turning out to promote this message. And it does seem to be working. It does seem to be allaying the fears of some of the more conservative voters out there, and especially women who so needed to be targeted in this effort to get marijuana legalization passed in Washington state. I want to refer back to the previous story that Carrie brought us in the headline news about donations. And again, money talks in this legalization effort. In Washington state, they have raised $3 million in donations to get legalization passed, and they've spent $2.8 million of those dollars. Of the donors to the Washington legalization campaign, Drug Policy Action, which is the political action committee of the Drug Policy Alliance, has given $715,000. Peter Lewis of Progressive Insurance has donated $853,000. Rick Steves, the European travel guru and normal advisory board member, has given $350,000. The ACLU of Washington has given $180,000. On the other state that's trying legalization, Colorado, the Regulate Marijuana Committee has raised over $926,000, almost a million, and spent $845,000 of that money. Dr. Bronner gave him $50,000. Regulate Marijuana raised $820,000 from the Marijuana Policy Project, another $30,000 from the Council for a Livable World, and $17,000 from the Coalition to End Marijuana Prohibition. And so this just points out the fact that we are seeing much better poll numbers in Washington state and in Colorado. In Colorado, the last numbers we saw were also above 50%. Than we are seeing in Oregon, where the last polling I've heard from public policy polling, when asked the general question of whether marijuana should be legal, Oregonians only support that question at 43%. It's a sad state in our American electorate that you have to have six and seven figures worth of money to get your message across, even when people generally support marijuana legalization, but it is a fact. Here in the state of Oregon, there are voters that don't even know that Measure 80 exists. So if you're out there, if you're a no on I-502 person, help us set the precedent in Oregon by donating to the Yes on 80 campaign. You can go to yeson80.com or octa2012.org and donate to the campaign. For us to be trumpeting $5,000 donations when we really need hundreds of thousands of dollars of donations is really a sad state of affairs. We've only got 55 days left until the election, and we still have yet to have a billboard or a TV ad here in the Oregon markets. We've got to raise this money quickly. Please give to the organizations that are working to help pass Measure 80 if you can, right now, right today. It's needed more than ever. Speaking of needed more than ever, it's 20 after, 4:20 in Schenectady, New York, and Hartford, Connecticut. We're going to take a break, so stick around. When we come back, we got your daily Toker Tunes.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Dear Mom, when I was in college, I used to drink a lot. It was kind of crazy. But now that I'm older, I prefer to use marijuana. It's less harmful to my body, I don't get hungover, and honestly, I feel safer around marijuana users. I hope this makes sense, but if not, let's talk. I love you.
Look, when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Remember, Mr. President, you once were just one bust away from being Barry the drug criminal.
Life ain't a box of chocolates gum. That's why people smoke weed and take bumps and drink way too damn much and get drunk and do it all over again first of the month.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, folks, welcome to Irie Wednesday, where we just lay back and enjoy some of them island-flavored grooves. And today, we're going right back to this album that I've been playing a few tracks off of called Reggae's Gone Country, because it appeals to me. You know, I grew up the son of a country musician, and a lot of these songs that are on this album are old favorites of mine that I've been listening to for years and years and years. And it's nice to hear them done in a different sort of way. So without further ado, let's just get right to it. This is the Alabama classic, Feel So Right, with Gramps Morgan on your Daily Toker Tunes for Irie Wednesday. My heart a smile.
passion rises high.
Morgan with Feel So Right, the Alabama classic. From the album Reggae's Gone Country, a lot of great songs on there. Stick around, we're back with Dr. Mitch Earlywine and your live questions in our Cannabis Q&A. Stick around.
Hi, this is Dan Michaels. If you're looking for professional voice talent for your commercial or podcast, I'm your man. Visit danmichaelsaudio.com for more information. Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez. Oh,
cannabinoids.
What a gift. Flame on, flame on if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Fire it up. Flame on, flame on if you can.
You're looking for that dope weed. Pony boy's a man. Flame on, flame on. The Russ Belville Show is available on your mobile devices. Check out RadicalRuss.com for more information.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pens the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, time to get into the Cannabis Q&A. Plenty of stuff to cover today. Welcome, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, back to the show.
Always a pleasure.
All right, so we're getting close to fall here, and we're getting some more studies that are coming out on marijuana use. And it always seems like when we get close to election time, the scaremongering stories come out. They gotta, you know, scare the hell out of us, make sure that we don't do something stupid like legalizing marijuana. And the one that's been heating up the headlines lately is this study on marijuana and testicular cancer. This idea that people that smoke, men, of course, who smoke marijuana early on in life are at a much greater risk for testicular cancer. Dr. Mitch, I was wondering if you've seen that study and what you can tell us about it.
So this study, I'm afraid, is a bunch of statistical flukes, and the media ran with it in a really uncomfortable, disturbing way. Testicular cancer is relatively rare, Russ. We're talking about something that affects less than a half of 1% of men in a lifetime. So it's hard to predict something that's this rare. So the American Cancer Society will essentially try to publish anything that looks like they might have some kind of link to this, just in hopes of trying to make some progress in this field. And the authors on this journal article were really, you know, straightforward about how this is not a particularly sensible bunch of data. If you look really closely, for example, folks who smoke less than once per week, they're twice as likely to get cancer as folks who don't smoke. But folks who smoke more frequently, they're not significantly different from the folks who don't smoke. Already I'm suspicious. then I look closer at the tables, and it turns out anyone who's ever tried cocaine is at less risk than anyone who has never tried cocaine. That makes no sense at all. Then you look even closer, and it says, oh, the folks who have used less than 10 years, they're at increased risk. But the folks who have used more than 10 years, they're not at increased risk. Again, I mean, this is just completely nonsensical bunch of statistics that have been run, and a few things turned out, and they're reporting them all. The effect size for the one thing that's significant is only basically a doubling in risk, and that, in truth, is not enough in most epidemiological studies to even warrant a whole lot of continued funding on this kind of thing. But you know how it is. As we close in on Halloween, everybody needs a frightening cannabis story.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I got out of this as well. I mean, if you were to take the study and at least the media reports on the study at face value, if you want to avoid testicular cancer, do some cocaine and smoke marijuana for a long time. I mean, come on, that can't possibly be what we're talking about here.
It really, I think, is a product of the fact that testicular cancer is most common in folks in 20 to 39 range. Mm-hmm. And so it just happened to be these are the folks who haven't smoked pot as long. And sure, these are the folks who happen to have tried coke once because they're of that target cohort. Like, it's really got nothing to do with testicular cancer and everything to do with the age of the people in the sample.
Sure. You know, when the story came out, there was a few of them that did give us some interesting discussion on the different types of testicular cancer, seminoma and non-seminoma, I think is what they were called. And this was saying that there was increased risk in that more aggressive type. But again, what is the real risk that people are facing generally from testicular cancer in the first place?
Well, so obviously women, the risk is zero.
Right.
And for men, we're talking about 1% over your lifetime. And again, I feel like the fact that they broke it down, in a sense, just doubled their number of statistics that they ran, right? And so now you've got twice as many chances of finding things by chance, and sure enough, you do find something.
And correct me if I'm mistaken on this, but isn't testicular cancer one of the most survivable cancers out there?
Literally above 95% now. I mean, back in the 70s, when I was in high school and everybody was frightened of it, things weren't so good. Now, we really do have, I know the thought is scary, but great surgeries that don't necessarily have to take your testicle, and really focused chemotherapies that are also not outrageously horrible. The irony is the best way to handle some of those chemotherapies would be to use medical cannabis.
Yes. Dr. Abrams had been quoted in one of these stories on this testicular cancer study, and he points out one of the things that we point out a lot when we talk about schizophrenia is that if it were true, then we should have seen spikes in that around 1979 when so many people were smoking pot. We should have seen declines by 1992 when fewer people were smoking pot. But as I looked at the numbers, I went to the, I think it was cancer.gov and their databases, and I looked at the incidence rates of testicular cancer, and they do seem to have steadily risen since the 1970s, you know, from somewhere around, I think it was 3 per 100,000 to somewhere around 6 per 100,000. I might be wrong on the numbers, but have testicular cancers been on the increase, and what are some of the factors that might be leading to that other than increases in marijuana use?
I don't want to be alarmist about it, but it has been a very gradual increase, not a spike that would say, you know, hippies are suddenly all getting it.
Yeah.
And it's probably related to exposure to various toxins in our environment. So some of the things that we probably haven't even identified yet that may increase that risk are essentially making their way into our water and our food sources and our, you know, our general grass that we roll around in. And so that's, in a sense, part of the general increase in number of cancers. Because this is one that tends to occur earlier in life, I can't say it's just, oh, everybody used to die from heart disease and now they live longer and get this. So It really does seem like exposure to toxins may be the issue.
All right. Well, thanks for giving us the info on that study, because I know a lot of people have been emailing and tweeting about it, and we want to get the facts out on this. Folks, the phone lines are open at 971-533-7111. If you have a live question for Dr. Mitch here during the 1 o'clock hour Pacific time, Or if you're listening to this on replay, we now have a voicemail system. You can leave your question by voicemail and we'll bring it up on a future edition. We do this every Wednesday. So if you're a little shy about calling in live, go ahead and call the voicemail. We'll take your questions that way. Or you can get into our chat room at ustream.tv or radicalrust.com. Type /login to get yourself an account and get logged in for the chat, where we're going to go right now, where we've got a couple of questions sitting out there. First of all, runaround 666 in our chat room wants to know, is it safe to mix Vicodin and cannabis? And he says that he's been prescribed Vicodin for kidney stones.
It's not. I'm not recommending the home game. In part, both can be really helpful for pain in moderate doses for cannabis and in low doses for Vicodin. But in truth, it would in some ways kind of mask the effects of the opiate Vicodin if you're using cannabis on top of it. So odds are high you could decrease your Vicodin consumption if you're using cannabis, particularly for pain. And in truth, that would be much better in the long run because Vicodin, of course, has also aspirin-like compounds that are really hard on your kidneys, which the irony of treating kidney stones with them is not lost on me.
Right, right. And we've seen reports in the past, too, that the use of cannabis can have a synergistic effect with opiate-type pain relievers. Would that be in effect with Vicodin in that he might be able to take less?
And so you can imagine if you're taking two, if to take one with some cannabis is going to be easier on your liver and kidneys. And in truth, to smoke cannabis on top of two is in a sense, a waste of drug.
In general, do we know much about cannabis's effect on healthy functioning kidneys? Does it help kidney function, harm it, or have no effect whatsoever?
THC and the other cannabinoids do have to be metabolized and do end up excreted based on kidney function, but no, there are no data to suggest that it's impairing or facilitating that. Mm-hmm. That filtering process.
You know, that's something that we, is of interest to us. You know, Ganja John, our friend, went through kidney transplants, and a lot of these transplant centers will often object to patients using cannabis for medical purposes for the fear that somehow it's going to harm the organ or hurt rejections, you know, all that kind of stuff. Really, there's nothing to that, right?
Well, in both liver and kidney, in fact, it may make it a little easier to stick to your drug regimen. So I find that just completely racist, you know. It's
yeah.
Nuts.
Well, Ganja John's in our chat room right now. He says, "Yay me!" he's still kicking, and trust me, the cannabis use is still going. So it must be working okay for him. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our cannabis Q&A, taking your live questions in our chat room and on our phone lines at 971-533-7111. And while we wait for a question, there's another study that got forwarded to me from our virtual studio in Grastoria, Oregon. Before I get to that, though, there's a question. Carrie, do you want to take that question in that you just put up in the chat?
Oh, sure. The question I had, Dr. Mitch, I have a friend who's studying for a drug test, and we heard that you shouldn't engage in strenuous exercise. So my question is, does exercise release old THC metabolites into your bloodstream from your fat cells, and should one stop exercising before taking a dreaded drug test?
As it turns out, that impact, unless you've been just smoking a ton and you're doing some kind of fat absorbing exercise that's just impossible to even engage. You'd have to basically be at like 40% of max for 3 hours in order to actually get the fat cells to release more readily. The key is much more focused on consumption of water. And so it's probably fine to exercise just as much as usual, but you really have to stay not only hydrated, but essentially flooding that system to make sure you're getting as much metabolite washed out as possible, whether you're exercising or not.
Let's go with a question in the other direction. Should you exercise? Does that help excrete the metabolites faster?
Well, in fact, exercise increases metabolism of everything.
Okay.
So if you're, you know, hitting the aerobic bike 4 times a week, you're bound to do better than somebody who's just sitting on the couch eating the Cheetos.
All right. Well, thanks for that question, Carrie. Did you have a follow-up?
Well, I was just going to ask, so it is true that people that are more overweight have more THC in their body. It will be more difficult for them to pass a drug test. So would that say that men who are on average heavier, it would be more difficult for a man than a woman to pass a drug test, or women because their fat content is higher? Can you find a way out of that one?
The individual differences across the genders are so vast that it's unfair to completely generalize, but folks with higher body fat percentages, which women do have a higher average than men in the long run on the average, are going to store more THC and then have the potential to release it in a drug test under those circumstances. Now, is it sexist now, the drug test? I think that's an intriguing question, one that hasn't been addressed. We've shown in the past that the hair test has some problems with basically folks of African or Caribbean descent who have, or anybody with dark, thick hair really does have a harder time than folks with blonde, light hair. And so if you are studying for a hair test, the bleach it, re-dye it, and get a perm is certainly time well spent.
All right.
Wow.
Great information. Thanks, Dr. Mitch. All right, as we wind up here in our cannabis Q&A segment, we're still taking questions in the chat room. It helps if you put the word question in front of it in all caps. That way we can pick it out for the doctor here. There's another study, though. Carrie forwarded me this link as well, coming from looks like Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, and they released this just today. New research indicates marijuana-like compounds called endocannabinoids alter genes and biological signals critical to the formation of a normal placenta during pregnancy and may contribute to pregnancy complications like preeclampsia.
Preeclampsia, I believe, Russ.
Yeah, preeclampsia. Okay, this is published in the Journal of Biological Chemistry, saying that this disrupts the movement of early embryonic cells important to a healthy pregnancy. I know this just came out, Dr. Mitch. I don't know if you've seen it, but any thoughts on it?
I did see the abstract, and I need to take a closer look. I mean, the take-home message is, of course, don't smoke cannabis during pregnancy, which I know we've had, you know, some controversy around, but I feel like I can stand behind that one. We did have that one study last year suggesting more complications, birth complications, in folks who were using cannabis during pregnancy, but the base rate of those is relatively low. I think the most important thing is to rule out, is this really just a low socioeconomic status issue? And if folks who can't afford good prenatal care are the ones who also seem to be showing this effect, and we really need to think more about making sure folks are making their way to the doctor when they're pregnant and getting their nice prenatal vitamins in and making sure they don't have to work too hard and can take good care of themselves.
Well, yeah, and that's part of the confounding factors when we're talking about studying women, cannabis, and pregnancy, is that the illegality of cannabis use is going to make a woman less likely to want to admit it or to, you know, let her doctor know that that's going on. And women who are less likely to talk to their doctors are less likely to get good prenatal care. And women who get less prenatal care tend to have babies that have worse outcomes. And then you survey them and you ask them if they ever smoked pot, and you find out they did. And oh, look what you found. You got, you know, cannabis and baby problems, when really it was the prohibition that caused the problem in the first place. Is that right or what?
I mean, sad but true. And, you know, in the states further south in Ohio, where suddenly you can be risking a prosecution for child endangerment because you test positive for cannabis during pregnancy, what they're doing is essentially driving folks away from good prenatal care. It's really going to be a horrendous backfire.
All right. We've got a question from the chat room here as we wind things up. Our listener here asks, I've got a friend with cancer who has burning esophagus. Over-the-counter and prescribed medications don't seem to help, but the friend refuses to use cannabis if it will get them high. So I guess, number one, would cannabis help with this burning esophagus? And number two, what type of cannabis, how could they use it without, you know, experiencing the high?
So I haven't seen data on that disorder itself, and there are actually multiple potential causes for that symptom. So it would depend on which cause. But if it's a general GI sensitivity, then in fact, some of the sativa strains would probably be potentially helpful, and the issue then would be dosage. And so you can imagine a dose that's so small it wouldn't get Ganja John high, but it might get somebody else high, and so we'd have to really experiment with something like that in order to see if it would really work. And in truth, I think, you know, don't fear the reefer.
There we go. And one final question coming from our Georgia mom for marijuana, asking about HIPAA laws. And for people that don't know, HIPAA is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, Privacy and Accountability Act, which protects our medical records privacy. She wants to know, do these HIPAA laws protect us as patients when we tell our doctors that we're using cannabis?
In theory, yes. My personal physician and I have discussed this and decided against the idea. And so he knows who I am. He has my book. You know, we keep an eye on anything that might be relevant, but it is not in my records. And in all honesty, I mean, I'm pretty out, but, you know, my insurance company may or may not know, and I kind of like it that way.
Yeah, it's something, you know, everybody has to make their own decision on this. I know, you know, my wife works, she runs a medical clinic, and a lot of times she'll, you know, see people's medical records that'll come in, and when they've mentioned that they were using cannabis to treat whatever it was they're treating, doctors will write things in the charts like drug seeking. You know, somebody's drug seeking, and then the next doctor may think, oh, well, this person's an addict and we're going to treat him in a certain way. So, yeah, it's a scary proposition as to whether or not you talk honestly with your doctor about this. But if the doctor were to if this were to get out, you spoke to your doctor and told him that you use cannabis, but it got out to an employer or someone else that shouldn't know that. Is that where HIPAA would kick in?
In fact, yeah, that is clearly against the law.
Okay.
However, within the medical community, that everybody who has access to your records would see it, and then they do start making these oddball attributions. So imagine if I suddenly went in complaining of fatigue to a new physician, that might very well be the case. I might get labeled the pot guy.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dr. Mitch Earlywine joins us every Wednesday here for our Cannabis Q&A. Thanks so much for doing so, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
All right. When we come back, we got time for some radical ranting. Talk about realities in politics. Be right back after this.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You want answers?
I was mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, folks. 38 after the hour, and in today's rant, I want to talk a little bit about political pragmatism. I told the story earlier today about the donation that had come into the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act of $5,000 from Dr. Bronner's, the soap company, the hemp manufacturer, you know, very strong supporter of the movement. But in that number, I think there's a very telling comparison when you look at the contributions that the Dr. Bronner company made to the Washington and to the Colorado legalization efforts. Simply put, he gave 10 times as much to Washington as he did to Oregon, and he gave 10 times as much to Colorado as he gave to Oregon. And when I ran down that list of all of the big money funders from the Drug Policy Alliance, one of the major drug reform groups that has given, you know, over $700,000 to the Washington campaign, and the Marijuana Policy Project, another major group that has given over $800,000 to the Colorado campaign, you can't help but wonder, where are those big five and six figure checks for the Oregon legalization campaign? Well, folks, it really comes down to pragmatism. People that have this kind of money and people that have these kind of reputations at the national level cannot afford to be throwing the money away on something that they do not believe is a serious and pragmatic effort to legalize marijuana. Now, I appreciate everybody that tries to get marijuana legalization on the ballot. And when you look at the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act from our point of view, from the point of view of cannabis consumers, it is by far the superior effort to legalize marijuana. In that sense, in that if I had to pick a legalization that I would want to live under, and I could wave a magic wand and make it happen, it would be the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act. Limitless personal production, personal cultivation, limitless personal possession, a system of commercial cultivation and production that has been set up to go by international treaty, places to buy marijuana, hemp completely unregulated, all seeds and starts treated as hemp, money dedicated to drug education in the schools, et cetera, et cetera. I love it. There's so much I love about that. But there's one problem. My checkbook doesn't have any commas in it. And that's the thing, that's the realization we all have to come to here, is that passing legalization costs money. And in order to pass that legalization, we must get the money from some of these big national organizations and big funders. And heretofore, Oregon has failed to raise any of that kind of money because of a failure to compromise on some of these issues. I know you and I want limitless personal production, limitless personal cultivation, limitless personal possession. Why not? If we're going to treat it like alcohol, nobody tells me how many cases of beer I can buy. They do tell you how much you can home brew, though. I think it's a 100-gallon limit, 500-gallon limit, something like that. But it's a whole lot. It's not 1 ounce. It's not one plant, right? It's a whole lot. But I'm not the guy who's going to get it funded, and I'm not the guy who's going to get it passed, and I'm not that scared electorate that needs to be led from marijuana is a deadly, dangerous Schedule I drug that's like heroin and going to ruin the country to, all right, maybe I don't like it, but we can tolerate other people using it legally. You can lead the horse to water, but you can't make them vote. And in this case, we are still sitting at less than 50% in the state of Oregon, of all places, for legalizing marijuana. Now, the money coming into Washington and Colorado is coming in there because the people involved in those campaigns, for one, have dedicated themselves solely to those campaigns. That's their sole mission at this point. They're not wearing too many hats. But number two, they have done the polling and they have done the focus group testing to find out what will pass. Because it doesn't matter what legalization I like, it matters what legalization 50% plus one voters like. The legalization that passes is my favorite legalization. We've got to make a step. That step has to start sometime. And if that step is too much of a baby step for some of you, well, I'm sorry, but the baby step has to be taken. We can no longer accept the status quo of arresting people and ruining their lives over personal use of cannabis. And if that has to start at 1 ounce, then it has to start at 1 ounce. If it has to start with no home cultivation, then that's where it has to start. We can change those things later. As we are fighting for our rights to use cannabis, understand that at this moment in the public perception, we are criminal dopers. We are nothing but a bunch of potheads. We are criminals in their minds. It is very difficult for criminals to fight for their rights. But if we get it legalized in Washington or Colorado, even with the 1 ounce limits that they propose, the people under those 1 ounce limits are no longer criminals. They are citizens fighting for greater access to a legal product. And after that product has been legalized and been in place for 2 or 4 years, and the sky doesn't fall and the revenues start coming in, then you can start asking for increases of limits. Then we can start to get home cultivation instituted in Washington state. Then, after we don't see massive increases in traffic deaths and accidents on the freeways, we can start to pick away at a per se DUID limit. But if you want to play treat it like tomatoes, if you want to play, well, let's just make the most wonderful legalization we want and not listen to the professionals in Washington, D.C. who have to deal with the big money funders on a daily basis. If you don't want to listen to their advice, if you don't want to take their advice to compromise on some of these things, then you can keep running the same initiative over and over and over again. And maybe from time to time, you might get enough people behind it, enough grassroots signature gatherers to actually get it on the ballot. But then what? Then what? This is not a game, folks. Politics is not beanbag, as was once said famously. This is serious. We're talking about people's lives. We're talking about the entire country of Mexico slipping into a narco-terrorist state. We're talking about the people in 33 states that don't have medical marijuana who are suffering and dying. People in Texas, people in Oklahoma, people in Virginia, people in Ohio that are waiting for us out west to succeed, to do something, to topple that first domino that's going to end this federal prohibition. And some of us, like the No on 502 people, want to reject that. Some of us want to say, nah, this legalization isn't good enough. We'll just wait till 2014 or 2016 or 2018 or 2020 or however long it's going to take until 50% plus one of the voters will agree with us 100%. We won't have to compromise a bit. They'll agree that we should treat it like tomatoes, and the perfect utopia of pot will be instituted in the United States of America. But how many people get arrested in that time? 850,000 arrests every year while we're waiting for 2014 or 2016 or 2020. And while all the people in Texas and Florida and South Carolina realize that whatever year we pass, they got to add 10, they got to add 20 before they got even a shot at something like perhaps even medical marijuana or decriminalization. So when we're here in Oregon, a state known for its love of marijuana, a state that is consistently in the top 10 in the United States for the use, consistent use of marijuana, a state that was the first state to pass decriminalization in 1973, a state that was one of the first to pass medical marijuana in 1998, and $5,000 is the biggest donation we can get toward our legalization? Really? 43% is as big as we can get the polls for legalization in Oregon? Really? It's time for the leaders in Oregon to start recognizing political realities. It's time to start recognizing that unlimited personal production and cultivation, probably not going to fly yet. It's time to start realizing that perhaps getting in the way of legalization can be a bigger problem than getting it on the ballot. And time to realize that if the big money donors are going to continue to stay away from Oregon, it's time to make some changes so that they will want to come into Oregon, so that they will want to help us pass legalization. 2 years ago, in 2010, Prop 19 was doing really well in the polls. It was getting donations from Richard Lee, primarily, who pretty much bankrupted himself, getting it on the ballot, putting out commercials, putting out ads for it. And in the 11th hour, it did see some big name funders from Facebook and some other other big name funders giving 5- and 6-figure checks. But it was far too late to mount the serious campaign they needed. And what kind of legalization do they have on the ballot in California this year? That's right. They've got no legalization on the ballot in California this year. So take this seriously. Give to Measure 80 if you can. And people that are no on 502 in Washington, you ought to be given to Measure 80 like crazy, because this is the initiative you wanted. I don't know what to do about it, folks. I just know that I'm really depressed about it. That part of the reason I moved to Oregon is because I felt, because of its history, because of its demographics, because of its marijuana use, that it would have a really good chance of passing legalization. Let's make that happen. Let's get serious about legalization. Let's get pragmatic about it. Let's not be afraid to make some compromises that will bring the big money funders, that will get the soccer moms to vote for it, because it's working in Washington State. Women are supporting legalization equal to men. I'm Radical Russ for Brian the Red and Cannabis Carry. Thanks for joining us. Till next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Hey, everybody, stick around for Toker Talk Radio, Hour 2. The phone lines are open at 971-533-7111. And if we're not live, you can leave us a message. Stick around. We'll be right back after this.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roam it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.